I want to welcome Agile XRM to the podcast. I've known the people at Agile XRM for the past 12 years. I've seen how their business process management tool can add massive value to complex organizational processes in sectors such as finance and government. If you have complex processes or a need for dialogues on the Power Platform or Dynamics 365, take a look at how this BPM tool can add value. You can find them at agilexrm.com or check out the show notes for more details. Welcome to the Power Platform Show. Thanks for joining me today. I hope today's guest inspires and educates you on the possibilities of the Microsoft Power Platform. Now, let's get on with the show. In this episode, we'll be focusing on the Power Platform multi-tenant environment, and we'll also do a bit of a deep dive into a specialist documentation product for your solutions that you build on the Power Platform. My guest today is from Singapore. He works as a Power Platform technical lead at WPP. He has more than 15 years' experience in IT with major focus on the Power Platform and Microsoft 365. You can find links to his bio, social media, etc. in the show notes for this episode, as well as if we refer to any resources, you will be able to find them linked in the show notes. And with that, welcome to the show, Renee.
Hi, Mark. Glad to be here.
Good to have you on the show. Before we kick off and talk about PowerDocu as well as this multi-tenant environment, which I find very interesting, it's something that I've been doing a bit with myself in this past year. Tell us about food, family, and fun. What do you do when you're not working?
When I'm not working, sometimes it feels like that doesn't happen very often these days, but family is obviously a big part. Kids, spend a lot of time with them. Other than that, I've got Star Wars plays a big part in my life, you could say. Been a huge fan for a long time. I've got a huge comic collection. I'm in the process of creating my own Mandalorian armor. I bought a 3D wow. printer, printed stuff, sanded, painted stuff, working on it. So in the next few weeks, I should have that ready. So that's the next big thing for me right now that I'm really spending my spare time on.
That is phenomenal and sounds very, very interesting. What 3D printer did you go with?
I bought a Ender 3. I forgot the exact full name.
What was your decision-making process around what particular printer you settled on? Because you've got a lot of choice.
Yeah, obviously, you do your research, you see that there's a range of different brands, and then you just get lost because there are lots of options. I decided to check what can I easily get here in Singapore, what kind of support is there, and which models are there. And obviously, there are a couple of brands, a couple of models that are usually generally recommended by people. So I wanted to make sure I get something that people are happy with, don't complain about, and then I just pick. Yeah, whichever one was convenient for me to get. So it was really, I wouldn't want to say a very deep dive process, but yeah, just narrowing it down to a couple of models and saying, yeah, I'm just going to pick that one before I spend too much time figuring out which one might be the best. Yeah.
Would you still buy the same model again now that you've worked with it a bit?
Well, I don't have any experience with others. Obviously, I see comments from other people with other printers, and I think, yeah, probably this is also good. I would still say buy the same printer, actually. I'm very happy with it.
Good.
Learned a lot with it because obviously my expectation was it's going to work most of the time. Didn't quite work most of the time because I made mistakes. Printer was interrupted. Funny stuff happening. So you learn a lot actually in the first few months of using it. But then things get quite stable. And so yeah, right now it's, you could say, printing nonstop. So I print stuff for the kids, for myself. Yeah, there's always something that you think, yeah, I could print that. Christmas around the corner, started printing Christmas ornaments for the tree, and yeah,
I love
it. It's quite a lot of fun, actually.
That's so cool. And I know this is not our main topic, but do you, when you say you're creating the or you're printing the Mandalorian armor, are you talking about full life size, as in you could fit the armor, or are you talking about like a figurine?
I printed figurines, but yes, I'm talking about full life size, so it's going to be wearable. I'm gonna wear that, and it's not the Mandalorian from the show, but a Mandalorian armor, but still. Yes. Helmet, shoulders, chest, back, knees. Wow. Everything printed. Most of it has been prepared and is ready, nearly ready to be worn, but still a couple more weeks to get everything done. Yeah.
So once you put the helmet on, yeah, will you ever take it off?
I probably have to, at some point, yes. But yeah.
So you can't be a true Mandalorian, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Unless you go for a dip in the, I forget where it was, I have to go and have a swim.
Sacred waters of Mandalorian.
Yeah. Awesome. Now, you mentioned Singapore there. I take it you're not Singaporean. So what took you to Singapore? Yeah.
I'm originally from Germany, and a long, long, long time ago when I was studying, I had to do an internship as part of my studies, and I decided, I want to go somewhere else, so not stay within Europe, where obviously things are fairly similar or close to each other. I wanted to experience something different, and somehow I found Singapore, so Singapore is in Asia, but they speak English. That sounds good, because I didn't want to go somewhere where you could say basically language would be something completely different or something like that. So I didn't really know what to expect, obviously, being young and never having lived abroad for a longer period of time. So I thought, Singapore sounded good. Came over here then for that internship. And obviously, I had my culture shock at the very first night and the first few days and weeks. But then I started to like it more and more over time. So at the end of the internship, I extended the internship and decided also, I want to come back to Singapore. Quickly went back to Germany, finished my studies and came back to Singapore then to really start working. I thought, I'm going to just stay here as long as I like it. If I ever don't like it anymore, then I can just go back to Germany or see where else I could go or something like that. But yeah, that was a long time ago, as mentioned. So I came here in 2006 the first time, so nearly 18 years ago. And I'm still here, still love it. So yeah, that's how I got here. That's how I got to, so to say, fall in love with Singapore. And why I'm still here.
It's an amazing place, Singapore, and I've been to it multiple times across my career, as in the very first time was for Microsoft work, why I went there. And, you know, it's interesting in having a stable government, I suppose, how it does, that really orchestrates how society runs, but not in a dictatorial way, right? And what are your thoughts from living there and just... It's like a place you can't really fault. It's almost like a utopia in a way, in how they've created a society that seems to benefit everybody, that allows everybody to grow. But of course, there are some rules in place to enable that to happen. Yeah. What are your thoughts?
I probably think that my thoughts changed a bit over time. Obviously, I mean, when I first came in hearing, there's the government, it's one big party and they've been in power ever since Singapore was founded and they have the majority ever since. Obviously, that felt a bit like a bit of a concern for me, thinking, no, democracies, you've got a range of different parties, etc. And but over time, obviously, I don't want to say my opinion fully changed here, but I can see, obviously, that the government here is, as you said, basically, it's not really like a very pure, restrictive kind of... ruling party, a ruling system, etc. It is still obviously meant to benefit the country overall, you could say. Obviously, we could discuss for hours in terms of, if they certain policies, is it good or bad? I'm not going to say everything is obviously perfect. I mean, say utopia, obviously, being here, we see all the, so to say, bad things as well. But obviously, I know that the stability that we have here overall, I would say, is a very positive thing. And while there are definitely, you could say, policies or comments or actions, for example, from politicians or the ruling party or so that I might say, no, I disagree with it. I would also say, I can obviously complain a lot about, I don't know, Germany as well, regardless which party we look at or which who's currently the chancellor or anything. So obviously, expectation is, no, there's never a perfect system. There's never a perfect government in place, etc. And obviously, my hope is that, and that's my constant hope, is that it's not just that, there's a strong, good ruling party, but also that the opposition, obviously, then is also getting better and stronger, because you want to make sure that nobody gets complacent and thinks, everything's awesome, and we'll just leave it as it is. But obviously, there's that constant, the constant review to see how can we do even better potentially. Obviously, that's roughly my views in a nutshell. Like I said, we could talk for hours, but...
I always like constraining myself not to go down a rabbit hole there. Tell me about WPP, the company you work for. Yeah.
So WPP is a very, very large organization that rarely anyone ever heard of. So most people I talk to, they may only have heard of it if they heard about one of our operating companies or maybe know somebody who worked for us. So WPP is the world's largest media and advertisement company. So we've got more than 100,000 employees worldwide spread over a very large number of operating companies. So it's not just WPP, but rather there are a range of operating companies under that big WP umbrella. So there's, for example, Krubem with 35,000 employees or so globally. Even Krubem consists of multiple agencies like Wavemaker, Essence MediaCom, others, etc. So basically, it's quite large overall, the setup. What that means for us, really, we work, as mentioned, media and advertisement industry. Our clients are then usually the big other companies that need to, create advertisements, produce something, place it somewhere. Maybe they want to launch some, marketing events, etc. Somewhere within the WP company, there's usually somebody who can help them. Obviously, it just means, we're doing one thing, but rather the full life cycle of, we have a new product launch that we need to do, and we need to place advertisements, etc., etc. We can help there, obviously, then. What it now means, obviously, we spread across the globe, very large, from an organizational point of view, very complicated. I joined, for example, Krubem nearly 5 years ago. Krubem is one of our operating companies, and I was within Krubem IT. Now we've got a centralized IT, so now moved up to WP IT. And even right now, I feel like we're so big that sometimes you don't even know what's actually fully out there, both from organizational view, but also from a technical point of view, then obviously with what we're dealing with, etc.
Wow. I just took a quick look on the website, and Ogilvy, of course, is one of the big brands that jumps out to me, I'm familiar with. Many I don't, probably more European-based organizations. What was your background? I just want to bring this together. What's your background in the Power Platform?
So Power Platform for me was something I started to look at a couple of years ago. So I come from a SharePoint background. I started working with SharePoint in 2007 and continued working with it for more than a decade, basically. That brought me then obviously to Office 365, and that then obviously also led me a bit to the Power Platform. So as Power Platform people usually come either from SharePoint or Dynamics background. I'm the SharePoint guy, so to say, then. And for me, it was really Office 365 had obviously SharePoint workflows in there. There were info platforms in there. And at some point, Microsoft said, we're going to deprecate those. And I was then obviously looking at, what kind of replacements are there. And 2016, then Microsoft started introducing Power Apps. And that's when I started to look into it a bit. And that obviously then became a bit more and more over time, looking more at Power Apps, looking a bit more into Power Automate and any of the other Power products in the Power Platform, obviously, then. So, for me, it was really getting slowly started with it as that side activity. And then over time, also looking at, now we also need to look at, for example, at, there are lots of apps out there. Maybe you should actually figure out who's creating apps, those kind of things. So that was when I was working at Krubem, and we started to look at, we should probably introduce some governance and see if you can support other people. And that's how I slowly focused more on Power Platform and less on SharePoint and Office 365 over time. Yeah.
Nice. So give me an understanding, because, we mentioned multi-tenant, and sometimes there's a confusion with people. They get tenants and environments mixed up. And so that's what so at a starting point, tell me about your tenant setup.
Yeah.
And what are you kind of responsible for from a tenant perspective?
So as I just described, obviously, the complicated setup of WPP with a range of operating companies, which also meant then that historically there were a range of tenants, Microsoft 365 tenants, basically, that were set up. And obviously was not maybe the best idea, but that's how things started many years ago. Also meant that company decided at some point, we don't need, I have no idea how many tenants. Doesn't make sense to operate on a very large scale across too many tenants. Let's try to consolidate where it makes sense. So that happened then also over the past few years. So we ended up with what we call the 10 strategic tenants. So really 10 tenants that we will focus on. Anything outside of that would likely then be integrated at some point, or is, so to say, out of scope for our core team. So myself, for example, me and the Power Platform team, we don't look at anything else besides these 10 tenants. If there is another tenant, yeah, we don't, so to say, even know about it. We don't have access to it, etc. 10 is obviously still a very large number.
Yes.
And it's actually even getting smaller now. One of the tenants is just getting, so to say, I'm going to say decommissioned. We just started migrating off that tenant. So users moving to other tenants where they usually should be, could be, apps, flow, SharePoint, Teams, etc. Everything migrated. So we are, so to say, already now thinking in terms of, yeah, we only have 9 tenants. And because obviously it's boring if you don't do a migration and merge it, company also decide, yeah, let's actually merge 2 of our big operating companies, VMLY now and Wunderman Thompson, move them into one big VML entity, which means, yeah, we now also need to think about, yeah, there's going to be a next big tenant merge also happening at some point soon. Well, soon, obviously, starting. Preparations are ongoing, but they are starting. So yeah, that's, so to say, the overview of what we have. So 10 tenants was the starting point for us. Right now it's 9. In the future it's going to be 8. But we're still dealing with multiple.
You got 109,000 employees worldwide. How do you, I take it a lot of those organizations, those companies, are obviously operating under their own domain name and hence why they've got their own tenant.
Would correct, that be
correct? The mergers make sense, bring them into one. It's funny, I was involved in a rail company that acquired 3 or 4 different rail companies, and we went through a multi-year process of joining them all together, you know, to become a single one. At the end of the exercise, the board decided to split the company up and sell off all these individual rail companies. So it's funny how it goes up and it goes down, right? It contracts and it, you know. Have you always then, was 10 the maximum number of tenants, or did there used to be more than that and you've got to 10? What was the really starting point? Roundabout.
There were more. I honestly don't even know how many there were. That was, so to say, before my time. So when I was just part of one of the operating companies, I only looked at that Group M tenant or within that Group M tenant. I didn't even know how many others there were. I mean, I knew that there were some, but I didn't know the full scope. Even right now, I think there's still a few other tenants, so to say, that exist. But like I said, they're not in scope for us because they might be way too small, maybe getting decommissioned at some point. So other people, other teams look after them. But yeah, so I'm not going to say 10 was that magic number to be worked towards to. It was probably just the one that from an organizational and technical point of view, just started to make sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So the scenarios I've come across is at least 2 tenants, right, inside a large organization. And the 2 tenants are not there because that was a design decision. It was there because the organization may be running in a very siloed approach to how it did business, and the business got their tenant and run their business a certain way. And then IT were like, no, we should be creating segregation. And sometimes it's an education thing where people are doing multi-tenant because they don't understand in a multi-environment strategy, right? So they don't understand that you can still segregate everything, but in an environmental view. And then, of course, the one of the challenges that you have with a multi-tenant strategy is then, do you have a multi-license strategy? Because the licenses don't, you know, go across tenants in that scenario. And so, therefore, it creates its own set of challenges. Now, I take it the licensing is not an issue for you because nobody would need, theoretically, from a user base to be in different tenants. Would that be the case?
Actually, if you think about it, I mean, a large organization like us, we sometimes have organization-wide things that need to be happening so that you're not just saying, yeah, we need to, let's say, for example, we launch an app and it needs to be accessible only by one operating company. Yeah, you could put into one tenant. But there's obviously often a need to have something really company-wide overall. Now, obviously, tooling-wise, it might mean that there are other things that you think about. But from a, for example, from an, just thinking in terms of, for example, scenarios that we had recently, sometimes you might want to really target people across different tenants, not because you say, I need people from different tenants, but that's just really because where they are. What we had very recently, for example, we had a Power App that went live in October that was launched by the legal team, actually. So they need to ask our global CEOs and CFOs, for example, for a declaration. They need to make a declaration saying, yes, my company, my SOX entity, basically, that I'm responsible for, are there any conflicts of interest? Are there any other potential conflicts from a compliance point of view? They just need to make that annual statement. Something like, oh, my wife is working for a competitor, or my niece is working in my company. Something like that, basically, obviously. Because, again, from a compliance point of view, there may be things to be reviewed. Because it might be, as you can imagine, obviously, they're legally okay, but better to basically get it officially confirmed that everything is properly done, etc. So anyway, I described the big company setup. We've got, I don't know how many companies, but I know that we targeted around 1,100 something CEOs and CFOs globally, actually, and to complete that declaration, that conflict of interest form. And that really meant they are spread across tenants. So when you think about, oh, do they need to have a license somewhere else, or do they need to access something somewhere else? And you think about, yeah, how do you make that accessible? And because it's a Power App, we then, for example, had to decide, yes, it needs to be centrally somewhere. Let's not put out, I don't know, an app in each tenant and consolidate it afterwards, but rather we want one single source of truth, actually. And obviously came with a lot of other challenges. Then Power Apps went relatively well. I say relatively well because we're having an ongoing discussion right now with Microsoft around the licensing aspects, because the documentation says it shouldn't work, but it does work. Accessing a Canvas app with Dataverse should not be possible from a licensing perspective unless you have a license in the host tenant in the app, the tenant hosting the app. But we are fully licensed. We've got all premium licenses, so that's good, but we don't want to obviously double license people. So what it simply that means then, if I come from, again, Krubem, and I access the app in the corporate tenant, then I would theoretically need a license in the corporate tenant, but we realized, oh, you don't need it. But yeah, ongoing discussions with Microsoft here. Interesting. Just make sure that things are done properly, working properly. Microsoft was involved, obviously, from very early in that project, etc. Helped us a lot. And it's quite interesting, obviously, because as I described briefly, what I wanted to start with, you sometimes really have that scenario where you want to really have an app that is centrally available and accessible to the whole company. Yeah. Not because all 100,000 people will need to access it, but there may be, again, a reason where people from across the tenants may need to access something or want to do something with that app.
So you know, my solutioning head goes off then, and I'm just like, why wouldn't you just create a Power Page portal, right, which would allow you to address that scenario? Was there something complex enough that required that couldn't be done on a portal that needed a Canvas app?
Good question. It's probably an alternative. Let's call it that way. I would have to review all the requirements again and see. There is a chance that it could work, but I'm not going to say practically that it would be definitely an alternative. It's, as you know, obviously, there are always multiple ways to get something done.
Of course.
There's never a best way. We figured out that the way we did it right now, it's working. We know that there are a range of, let's call it identity-related issues, but maybe Power Pages could have resolved that, or maybe not. No idea, actually, because, again, as described, basically, I mean, you sometimes surface other issues in the technology stack that are not visible until you yourself do something.
Interesting scenarios that you have. And any other challenges that you came across? Did you come across, or do you come across in overseeing 10 tenants?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, what it means is there's a lot happening. So, I mean, the big challenge that we knew we had to tackle was, how can we figure out what's happening where? And obviously, that meant deploying the Microsoft COE starter kit to all of those tenants. Because, I mean, we can't manage the platform if we don't know what's out there. If we have no insights into who are our top makers and which apps are popular and how many flows do we have, all that information, then, not possible. And you don't want to go into 10 tenants and look at things 10 different times, or rather, ideally, you want to have ideally a centralized view of things. So that's why I deployed the COE starter kit into each tenant. And then, because it comes with a dashboard, we also then, so to say, aggregated or merged the data from each tenant into a single data set. So, like I said, we don't have to look into 10 different data sets, but rather have a single view on hopefully everything then basically.
How do you make sure that, are you scripted around making sure that every time Microsoft drops a new update in the COE starter kit that you deploy that across all of them? Yeah. How do you handle that kind of admin overhead?
That's obviously an interesting thing. Like I said, I mean, doing things 10 different times is never really fun because, as you can imagine, I mean, doing it in one tenant could work. Doing it in 10 tenants, there's a chance that it will fail somewhere because of some other slightly different configuration or some other difference. While it should be mostly standardized now, obviously, there's never a full 100% guarantee. Correct. So, yeah, strategy for us, we're not doing a monthly update. That would be probably, I don't know, a full-time job being making sure that it's working, that it's tested before we update it, and then just to start the same thing again. Way too much, I would say. Microsoft, I think, recommends doing it every 3 months, but we realized we focus on every 6 months, unless there's really something absolutely critical that we need to deploy. Six months seem to be like that sweet spot, so that, we're maybe not as current as Microsoft recommends, but it's an acceptable, so to say, risk for us. I mean, it means we've got time to focus on other things. The functionality that we have, we are happy with it. Everything seems to be working then. And updates then obviously mean then it's a lengthier activity of a couple of weeks then, because deploying the update is something where we then spend a lot of time testing, reviewing, making sure that things are still working. They were working before. Are there any new things we need to consider? All of that obviously then flows into that process. So, that's why every 6 months sounds good for us right now.
Yeah. Do you have any, in the scenario, do you have any nuances around things like ultimately what Azure tenant things are deployed to? As in, so from a geographic perspective, whether you've got records that have data sovereignty issues, does that play into what you're doing, or is your industry not really affected by this?
Not too much, I would say. I mean, from a location point of view, I think all of our tenants are situated in Europe. I don't think we've got actually a tenant that is directly in, let's say, the US. Definitely not in Asia, actually. Yeah. So, yes, that might even simplify things up, obviously. The only thing that we then do is obviously, sometimes you might say, we need a, for example, a new Power Platform environment that we then set up in a geographic location closer to its target audience. But we are a global business. Sometimes, you need to set up something for, again, I don't know, the US market only or so. Then obviously you just say, why not deploy it over there and not have it in Europe? But that's it,
And so would you classify yourself as a European business or a British business? And the reason I ask this is that on Wikipedia, it has all your financial earnings in pounds, not euros. And so therefore, are you more governed by EU regulation or UK?
I feel like I'm not in a position to fully comment on that properly. So we are headquartered in the UK, so that's one part, but obviously a very global company. And as described, basically, I mean, we have companies everywhere. So obviously, there's Krubem Germany, Ogilvy France, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So obviously, then that means, they obviously also are under the respective European laws and dependingly accordingly then as well. So from a legal point of view, if there is ever any question that I would have, basically, can we actually put something in a certain geography or so, or should we not put it in a certain geography? Yeah. I'm not going to make the decision myself. Obviously, that's where I then rely on other teams then obviously then say, from a legal point of view, this is the status and that's okay or that's not okay, et cetera. Yeah.
Awesome. Interesting. I could talk a lot more on this, but I see we're running out of time. So I'd like to switch gears and talk about PowerDocu. Tell me what is PowerDocu?
So PowerDocu is a small tool that I developed a bit more than 2 years ago to help with documenting your Power Apps, specifically Canvas apps, and then your Power Automate flows. So the need I saw personally, but also from a professional point of view, was that, you saw you've got some apps, you've got some flows, they exist, they run, they work, but they were not fully documented potentially. And once you need to support them, you want to make changes to them, you need to dive in again, figure out what is actually in there, what kind of environment variables are in use, or on which screen is a certain component used, or in your flow, for example, what kind of connectors are used, all those kind of things, basically. Mm-hmm. And my idea was, I want to get some technical documentation done automatically so that I could simply set then take my app or my flow or a solution with apps and flows, run it through the tool, and it spits out a standardized documentation. So I see immediately, for example, for an app, how many screens are there, how many controls are there, which controls are on which screen, when I click on this button, what's going to happen, which code gets executed, all those kind of things, basically. And yeah, so I decided to initially then just see if that could even be done, and the mini prototype was working, the small proof of concept, then I just expanded it over time. So current status is, like I said, Canvas apps can get documented, flows can get documented, started to document Dataverse tables so that I can slowly move towards model-driven apps as well.
Yes.
Goal is still to expand and enhance the tool over time. I don't want to say constantly because I took a 6 months break now and I'm about to start it again now, basically once my Christmas break starts. But yeah, really want to make sure that more things get added. Because as I described, basically, I mean, there's always that personal or professional need from my side as well. Sometimes what I do is, oh, we've got an app internally and I need to figure out what's actually in there. So run it through the tool. I get my documentation. I can use that documentation then to, yeah, see what's happening in the solution with the different apps and flows, etc., without having to deploy it and looking at it from, really by opening the flows and apps directly, etc.
Nice.
Yeah.
And so it's available on GitHub, right? It's freely available to anyone.
Yeah. So happy to also get any contributions, obviously. I mean, it's on GitHub. I received some pull requests as well with some smaller changes, and always happy to see that, obviously, because right now it's, a big one-man show. And like I said, I mean, I took a 6 month break, which meant that nothing much happened actually in the past 6 months. But I think the other people who might have some ideas or recommendations, I mean, happy for any kind of feedback or support that is out there.
Nice. Nice. I like it. I like seeing these tools crop up and really massive time savers for organizations. It would be interesting to see how this tool used in conjunction with a large language model and therefore to find gaps, you know, proactively based on what it's identifying as well. But yeah, good work. Good work. Love your community contribution. Before I let you go, Renee, is there anything else you'd like to close out with?
Oh, good question. That's probably the trickiest question for me. I don't even know what to say right now. I mean, we had a great conversation. There's always a lot more to talk. But as we are approaching Christmas period and New Year's period, basically, I don't know when the recording's going to go out, but to whoever's listening, well, have a happy Merry Christmas. Very Merry Christmas, sorry. Have a happy new year, and happy to see you and your show and also in the new year again.
Hey, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Business Application MVP Mark Smith, otherwise known as the NZ365 Guy. If there's a guest you'd like to see on the show, please message me on LinkedIn. If you want to be a supporter of the show, please check out buymeacoffee.com/NZ365 Guy. Stay safe out there and shoot for the stars.